listening to the ESP, the European Skeptics Podcast, an independent weekly show set out to bring you news, interesting topics and interviews with people mostly from Europe, building bridges and breaking down language barriers to show the world how active and awesome the skeptical movement is in the region. This is episode 386. I'm your host Annika Harrison, and with me today is my co-host Pontus Beckmann. Hallo!
Hey son, we're both back!
Yeah!
So some rogues took over the podcast for last week. We've kicked them out now. They're not here anymore. So bye-bye, Andras, bye-bye, Brian, and we're back now. So
yes, but Andras, of course, also will be back, and Brian, hopefully, too.
Yeah, of course, sure.
So we won't kick them out permanently.
No, it's just we're doing this. We're taking back what is ours, right?
Rightfully ours.
So Andras, of course, if people don't know, he is traveling, working. Mm-hmm. He has a job. I am back. I was really sick last week. I had a... It was all the symptoms of COVID, I should say. I mean, I don't know if it was because I didn't even bother to take the test, but I was sick. But Annika, you were occupied elsewhere, right?
Yes, I was basically taking a holiday.
Ah, that's good. Good for you. Good for you. Yeah. I went on a bit of a holiday, actually, after I... Well, when I became well again, I saw... What may be the last ever big performance by Elton John, because it was the last performance on the farewell tour, and it was pretty emotional.
Wow.
It was great. He's, you know, he's getting on there. You can see, you can tell, but it was great fun. I was up in Stockholm doing that, so it was nice, and I had a little bit of a vacation. But let's not talk about vacation. I need to comment. Being the resident Swede, the token Swede, as they say, Sweden is now, it seems like Sweden is cleared to join NATO. There are still formalities left. The Turkish parliament has to confirm, and then Hungary has to confirm. But I think we're all there. You don't have to be a big conspiracy theorist to see that Turkey has used Sweden to get to the US. And to make the US sell F-16 fighter planes to Erdogan, right? That's what he wanted. And that's why he's been such a... It's a bit silly and embarrassing to see how the Swedish right-wing government has been bending over backwards to please Turkey, while it, in my opinion, has never been about Sweden at all. It's been about these bloody F-16 fighters.
Yeah. Yes.
So, but... This is not a political podcast. I won't go in too much into it. But people could be a little bit interested in my personal opinion about NATO, about Sweden joining NATO. And I don't, I'm afraid I don't have a great insight to bring to the table. I don't know. It's big politics. I think some people in Sweden now lament the fact that this marks the end of an era where Sweden was neutral always. At least formally, but I think that's been a charade for a long, long time. Swedish neutrality is an illusion. We have been, we as Sweden has been collaborating with NATO for many decades now. And let's not bring up the Second World War, because the neutrality there was very problematic indeed. Sweden actually gave the Nazis free passage to Norway. So the Nazis sent German troops through Sweden, supposedly being a neutral country, to Norway. Nothing to be proud about there. And maybe it's better to be clear where we stand politically and say, okay, we belong with NATO. Anyway, yeah, enough politics, I think.
Yeah, and that means I can talk about Das Goldene Brett.
Oh, Das Goldene Brett.
Yeah. Because it's back. Goldene Brett refers to Brett vorm Kopf.
That doesn't help. If you don't speak German, that doesn't help.
That's the wooden plank in front of your head if you're being ignorant or stupid. That's like, it's actually a proverb that you have a Brett vorm Kopf. And that's a negative award, like the Rusty Razor. It will be awarded on the 5th of October in Vienna. And tickets are ready to buy.
Yeah. Do you know if you can still nominate people or organizations to receive the award, or how does that work?
I'm pr- pretty sure that's already done.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So it's a sort of a negative award, like the Australian Bent Spoon Award or something like that. And also...
Yeah, or the Rusty
Razor.
The Rusty Razor.
Speaking of the Rusty Razor, the Rusty Razor, of course, is part of the Occam's Awards. Nominations are open now for the Occam's Award for 2023. Mm-hmm. The winners will be announced at QED, which we, of course, talk a lot about. You should want another reason to be there when they announce the recipients. And in the case of the Occam's Award, there's the negative prize, the Rusty Razor. But then also there is, I forget what it is. It's Skeptical Activist of the Year or Skeptical Activism of the Year, something like that. It has changed a little bit. I must take the opportunity to mention that a podcast that you are now listening to once got the Occam's Award, not the Rusty Razor one, the positive award back in 2017. But it's always interesting, and we will put the link in the show notes if you want to go nominate your candidates for either the Rusty Razor or the positive award.
Sounds like a great plan. And something that's also a great plan is meeting friends all over the world, right?
Oh, yes.
And Andras met someone on the other side of the planet and recorded an interview with her. And that is, of course, Adrienne Hill.
Yes. It's fantastic to see how the skeptical movement is truly international. So Adrienne Hill, of course, one of the things she's doing, she's working for Skeptoid, which is a podcast from Australia. But she is Canadian. Andras, of course, is Hungarian, but then he was in Canada and they met up. And this is the recording from that meeting.
So I'm currently in the Canadian Rockies, beautiful area, and it's a little town called Canmore, not very far from Calgary. And because of it not being very far from Calgary, we could organize a meetup with Adrienne Hill. So Adrienne, welcome to the European Skeptics Podcast.
Thank you. It's such a privilege to be included. I'm excited.
Likewise. And well, we've been in contact for God knows when. I think when we were in Australia for the Australian Skeptics National Convention, and Richard connected us, Richard Saunders. Thank you very much for that, Richard. And since I was here as a tour guide, leading a group through the Rockies and basically through the country, I decided to ask you for a meetup. Many of our listeners can probably know your voice from the Skeptic Zone. What is it that you do? I mean, apart from being a reporter on Skeptic Zone.
Besides being a reporter, I am a retired high school math teacher, and I have my fingers in many pies. One of them is with Susan Gerbic's Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia project. I've been with her since 2019, I believe. I contacted her in 2018, but finished my training in 2020. So I was a slow learner, but since then I have done 7 or 8 Wikipedia pages plus other edits. In fact, my most recent upload was kind of an interesting one. I was stranded in the Denver airport, and I don't know if you know anything about the Denver airport.
Not much.
So it was completed in the 1990s, and because it's outside of Denver by quite a way, so you have to drive about 45 minutes to get to the airport, and because it was so over budget and it took longer than they thought, you know, the classic things that happen when you're doing a large build like that, a big construction project. And because of some of the unusual artwork that's in the airport, there's a lot of conspiracy theories about the airport. And because I was stranded, I looked on Wikipedia to learn more about these conspiracies that I'd heard about, and there was nothing on the page. So, those conspiracies actually have been attempted to be put on the page many times, but keep getting deleted. So I took it upon myself to try and find something that would be reliable. And there were all these new articles that had been released by the New York Times and the Denver local paper. And there was one other one that I can't remember off the top of my head. And so I redid that section, and it stuck so far, fingers crossed. And what's so interesting, I think, about it is that the airport decided to embrace the conspiracy theories, such as that there are aliens that reside in the tunnels that are meant for luggage, in the basement, or, you know, in the underground of the airport. But really what they're for is transporting luggage between the different terminals, the different planes, and check-in. But there's all these conspiracies that they're for aliens, they're for the New World Order, the Illuminati. There's all this interesting stuff about the airport. And they've embraced it, and to the point where they used it in advertising campaigns. They had a talking gargoyle that was there saying conspiratorial things to people as they passed by. So they've really embraced it, and apparently it paid off, and it's done really well. Yeah, so that was my most recent addition to Wikipedia. And one of my other things that I have my fingers in the pie, I guess, is with the Tourette OCD Alberta Network. I still am a volunteer for them and an educational consultant to help students who have Tourette syndrome, OCD, ADHD, anxiety, et cetera. So we go into classrooms. I don't do that much anymore. I don't go into the classrooms because they've hired a person that can do that full time, as well as manage websites, et cetera. So he and I stay in touch, and if he has any questions, I help him out. So I'm more of a consultant now instead of going into the classroom, which I did from 2005 till 2018, essentially.
Wow, amazing stuff. Getting back to the skeptical side of things, apart from being a Wikipedia editor yourself under the wings of our godmother, Susan Gerbic, you teamed up with her in a different project as well. So what is it that you do together with her?
Are you talking about the psychic thing? Yes. Yeah. So Susan will phone me up and say, hey, Adrian, one of them was on a Friday evening at 9 o'clock, I think, and said, hey, can you take a look at this video with me? I want your perspective on what this supposed psychic is saying, because you don't really, that's not your thing. And she wanted sort of a fresh approach to it.
Okay.
And so the first one was about an hour. And that was really fun. I found it really interesting because I'm not really familiar with the whole psychic world. I grew up not believing in psychics, so I didn't really, I thought it was something fun that people would do just as for entertainment, you know, like the disclaimer says. I thought that was, it wasn't something people really believed. So I find it quite fascinating, and it was really interesting in listening to Susan talk about what they're doing. I find really fascinating. And then the last one we did, I think it was 4 or 4.5 hours long.
Oh my God.
I know. She knew it was going to be a long one. And she did send me this one beforehand, and I was able to do a bit of research with it. And that's where I discovered something called Arcturian healing. Have you ever heard of that?
Does that have anything to do with the Arcturus, the star?
Yes. Apparently there's aliens from that system that have come to Earth, and there's mixed sort of beliefs, it seems like, depending on who the healer is. But essentially they came to Earth to give us some knowledge about healing. And it's of course about energy, you know, vibrational energy, and all sorts of other things. And if you want to know more about it, you can listen to the Skeptic Zone podcast. Because I did go through a couple things, but we're planning on doing a couple more episodes, at least one more, because you get into these rabbit holes and you just start to find out more and more and more. And apparently Arcturian healing was thought of by this, unfortunately, neuroscientist from Yale. And his name, remember, I said I can't remember names. I've been looking at the name all day today. And it is Jean Ang. Oh, I remembered it. And unfortunately, a PhD neuroscientist from Yale. So he has some credentials. And that makes it, I think, more worrisome. It's been around for a few years, not a long time. But I'm hoping that it won't become viral. You just never know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, on some of the like TikToks, there's quite a few views about this. So it is a bit worrisome.
Well, speaking of worrisome things that can be viral, earlier tonight, while we were having our nice chat, you mentioned something about K Canada and Canadians believing in ghosts. And I was very surprised to hear that in some provinces, believing in ghosts is a big thing, like here in Alberta. So what do we know about that?
Well, because of my work with Wikipedia, centered mostly around ghosts when I first started out, when I did my talk for the Western Canadian Reason Conference this last May, I incorporated some ghost speak, ghost statistics, etc. And there was a survey done by Canada, I think it was 2021, so not that long ago.
Excuse me, we are talking about Statistics Canada, so that's the government statistical authority of some sort?
IPSO. I think it was IPSO in this one. Now, the government one about religion was that we were talking about earlier, that was Stats Canada. And the numbers, which was very interesting, between religious belief and ghost belief are very similar. And the study from, or the survey from IPSO said that, I believe, across Canada was 46% of Canadians do believe in supernatural beings, such as ghosts. I think I'm saying that right. And in Alberta, it's just, if I remember correctly, it's around 50 or 56%. It's somewhere in that range. I'm pulling the numbers off the top of my head. Versus BC, which is our neighboring province, which is one of the lowest, and that was in the 30%. So it's quite a difference between the two provinces. And yeah, it's very interesting that there is such a belief in ghosts across Canada. And I think that was one of the most surprising things when I became an editor, was learning that most people, or a lot of people, there's a large percentage of people in both Canada and the US that believe in ghosts. And I did not know that. So it's surprising because we don't talk about it. When you go up to your friends, you don't talk about ghosts.
Yeah, if you're cautious enough, because you can end up in trouble very easily, which you mentioned it has happened to you.
Yes, it has happened because a family member actually did come out as believing in ghosts, and she was worried that I was going to be really negative about ghost belief when really I'm more interested. I find it fascinating. I find the culture very interesting, especially when you go to other countries, because the ghost sort of outlook is different from country to country. Some places it's scary, some places it's not. And I find that really, really interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's been lovely to meet you, and I think we could go on and on and on discussing stuff. And I would really love to see you again when I'm back, which will happen very soon. So I hope we can do it again. Thank you very much, Adrienne Hill, for joining me here in Kenmore, and have a safe drive home.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I don't think we've stopped talking since we met.
No, we haven't.
It's wonderful meeting all these people from around the world that are like-minded. It's excellent.
Let's keep talking.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, that was really exciting to hear, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, we can see again how international it is and how we all work together. She's working with Susan Gerbic, of course, but also with other stuff, and Richard Saunders of the Skeptic Zone. So good.
Kudos to you, Adrienne.
Yep.
You're powerhoused. And that would bring us normally to Twitch this week in Skeptical History, but because we don't have an Andras here, we also don't have a Twitch here.
No Andras, no Twitch.
So we'll skip that. And I want to know, Pontus, is there something to poke the Pope for?
Well, yes, at least there are some news. Frankie, of course, has been now the Pope for just over 10 years, and he is constantly appointing new cardinals. And that is a very important function, because the cardinals are the ones who elect the next Pope. So what Frankie just did was he announced that he has 21 new cardinals that he will appoint in September. So he's already published the names of them, and they will formally be appointed early September. 18 of those are young enough to vote in the next conclave. So if you're above 80, you're not allowed to vote in the conclave. And the conclave, of course, is the meeting that will appoint the new Pope. A conclave is called for when the previous pope either passes away or resigns, like Benedict did. As I mentioned, since Frankie's been at it for 10 years now, most of the electors, and the electors are the ones below 80 years of age, are appointed by him. So he's dominating that. Almost three quarters of the electors are now Frankie boys. It's 100 exactly out of the 137. That's a bit strange because the maximum is actually 120. That is a rule that was set by Paul the Fourth. But, you know, a rule that is set by one pope can be changed by another pope. Although Frankie hasn't formally done so. But he is now dominating that. I don't know. I have in the past said that probably the next pope will be a more conservative pope than Frankie. But now that he has 100 of the votes out of the 137, I don't know. Maybe there's a new quote-unquote progressive pope in the making.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We will see. But apart from that, we mentioned, of course, Sweden joining NATO. And I think a lot of listeners have heard about the public burning of the Quran in Sweden, which has stirred up a lot of emotions among many Muslims abroad and Muslim countries. It's been, this is a very complex story that we could make a whole different podcast about. But Frankie has chipped in on this topic and clearly condemned burning the Quran. He said, "I feel angry and disgusted at these actions." And then he said, "Freedom of speech should never be used as a means to despise others, and allowing that is rejected and condemned." Well, by him, I suppose. Just to make this clear, this is, as I said, a very complex issue. These Quran burners are clearly idiots, in my humble opinion. And they're probably and most likely backed up by forces who do not want to see Sweden in NATO and who want to create disagreement within NATO. And directing this towards Turkey, of course. To a large extent, a Muslim country, even if it's formally not that. But regardless of the motivations of the people who burns Qurans, it clearly must be a fundamental right and a part of freedom of speech to be allowed to demonstrate against dangerous and stupid ideas, such as religions. Now, of course, book burning is not a place where you want to stand in historically. That's very seldom the moral high ground to burn books.
Mm-hmm.
But then, on the other hand, having rules against offending religion would mean laws against heresy, which is clearly not where we want to go, or at least where I want to go. You should be able to criticize religion, right? You shouldn't be punished for being disrespectful against any ideas, including religions. And I think here, the reason Frankie chimes in on this is that he is upset because if people are allowed to attack one religion, Islam in this case, they could also attack the one that he happens to be the head of. So he may even think it himself that he wants to take a stand for all religions and want to stay strong. But really, I think he gets threatened when people are criticizing religion. And that's why he has an opinion in this case.
Yeah, I don't want to say too much about it because it's too complex. Mm. But I think respect and kindness goes a long way.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pontus, for poking the Pope. Mm-hmm. And that means we're going to the news.
Speaking of the bumpy road for Sweden into NATO, burning the Quran, etc., that has not helped things, of course, regardless of what Frankie has to say about this. A lot of anti-Swedish propaganda online has surfaced during June in the build-up to the NATO meeting in Vilnius that has just finished.
Mm-hmm.
The Swedish Agency for Psychological Defense. Yes, we have one of those agencies. They have noted that both Russia and Iran have been clearly promoting disinformation about Sweden, specifically when it comes to the Quran burning and similar things. There have been a lot of outright lies, often in the form of videos posted online. One video is said to show how the, quote, Swedish presidential palace, end quote, is burning after local protests. Of course, Sweden has no president and obviously no presidential palace, so that is clearly just nonsense. There are also footage of the Swedish prime minister, He's called Ulf Kristersson, and how he's talking. But then they have overlaid a voice, a voiceover in Arabic, who sort of, well, pretends to translate what is being said. And it's saying that Ulf Kristersson is saying, quote, "We don't need Arabs. They didn't dare to boycott Sweden before, despite the insults to their prophet and their repeated Quran burnings," end quote. And of course, Ulf Kristersson said nothing of the kind. But what you do, you tone down the volume a little bit and you put on a foreign voice, quote unquote, translating things. The most widely circulated clip is a film showing dozens of Muslims, including children, terrified and confused as shots are fired at the mosque where they are located. However, this video is from Lebanon after Friday prayers last week. So, but still, most people seem to believe that Sweden's Muslims are being prevented at gunpoint from practicing their religion. And that is not true. I mean, of course, there are some anti-Islam sentiments in Sweden, but not to that extent. There's no nobody is firing into mosques in Sweden to stop the prayers.
Well, that would be in the German news if that would happen. And I never heard of that. So
no, exactly. But that's because you trust the mainstream media. But people who listen to this, they think that mainstream media is censored and you don't hear about the real truth unless you go into the dark corners of the web to find the videos that really shows what's happening. And in this film, there's a line that's a voiceover saying, quote, "This happens in Sweden, poor people. Watch before the clip is deleted," end quote.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's still not deleted.
Fear is always a good way to influence people, I think. And something that a lot of people fear, sadly, is vaccines, right? For, in my humble opinion, not no big reasons, or no reasons at all, because vaccines save lives. And in Britain, there's actually a general practitioner, which means a doctor. I don't think she's a doctor. She's a medical practitioner and was an NHS GP. So from the National Health Services, this doctor called Dr. Jane Donegan has been struck off the register. So she's not an NHS GP anymore because she did statements about vaccines that a court has seen as misconduct.
Yeah.
They said this misconduct posed an ongoing risk to patient safety because she didn't have insight, and also the public confidence would be undermined if a doctor like that would still practice. She was got suspended immediately to protect the public. And I can only applaud that. So to say, like, this is almost a really right from the court side of things.
Yeah.
She works as a homeopathic and naturopathic practitioner. I think we all saw it coming. And has been researching disease ecology and vaccination since 1994, according to her website. She, for example, said that the historical decline in deaths from whooping cough was because of sanitation and surgeons, not vaccinations. She also said that people should ignore questions about their child's immunization history and other things. Like, I don't want to quote everything, but she definitely said, like, you shouldn't get vaccinated and your children also shouldn't. And that's not okay, obviously. And that's why I can only applaud the court for having taken her NHS ship back. And apparently, she even said she's delighted to be struck off the register of medical practitioners.
Oh, really?
Because she said, I quote, "Being struck off by a corrupt GMC is a small price to pay for taking a lawful ethical stand for the safety of British children," end quote.
Well.
So, yeah, very far down the rabbit hole, this one. yeah, there you go. I'm just happy that, I don't want to say I'm happy. Like, I don't want to be like too schadenfroh, like too gleeful of someone losing not really their job, but part of their reputation. But it's like, if it's important to protect the public, and it is, then it has to be done. So
yeah,
I can only applaud that. Yes.
Yeah. And just before we get too many emails, I do believe that a GP in the UK is the same as a medical doctor, or at least equivalent. You have to be a medical doctor to become a GP. Mm-hmm. If I'm wrong, please write in and correct that. And also, yeah, vaccines are good. And I forgot to mention in the introduction that I actually got a vaccine today.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I hope it's the same abbreviation in English. It's called the TBE in Swedish. Does that ring a bell, Annika?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's a very serious disease you can get if you are bitten by a tick. I've been meaning to do this for a long time, but now it happened. So anyway, get your vaccinations, people. That's always good.
Yeah, it's TBE in English.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
In German, it's FSME. Frühsommer Meningoencephalitis.
Okay.
And I only said that because it was German and long.
All right. Enough medicine for a while.
Yes.
Let's switch back again to Russia. We all know that the first aggression by Russia against Ukraine back in 2014, that was the annexation of Crimea. So Crimea is a big peninsula in the north mm-hmm. of the Black Sea. It lies very strategically between the northern steppes and southern Europe, or between Russia and the Mediterranean area of Europe, really, you can say that. Mm-hmm. It's been a focus of a lot of fighting since forever, really. When the Soviet Union was divided into the Soviet Socialist Republics. So before, while still the Soviet Union was a thing, it was divided into socialist republics. And at that time, Crimea was allocated to Ukraine. So that meant that when the Soviet Union collapsed, Crimea mm-hmm. ended up within Ukraine. And Putin has strategically called this one of I don't remember if it was Khrushchev's mistake or one of Stalin's mistakes, but he was said, quote unquote, mistakes by the previous regime. And this is to legitimize the annexation of Crimea, which happened in 2014. And it's still a very important place. Geographically, it's very important for shipping. And if Russia didn't have Crimea, which they shouldn't have, but if they don't, they have very limited access to the Black Sea and to the export of goods. So that's one point. That's very important from a trading point of view and political point of view. Crimea has always been important. But also, during the Soviet times, and also a bit since then, it has also been a favorite place for vacations. And I guess it's very suitable for that, unless there's a war going on. You can swim in the Black Sea and you can have a good time and have a drink and all of that. But now, when there's a war, you would think that people would think twice before taking a holiday there. But since Putin insists of calling what we now know is the biggest war in Europe since World War II, I would say, mm-hmm. that the war in Ukraine, he tries to say it's not a war, it's just a quote-unquote special military operation. And he wants to keep up appearances and pretend that nothing much is going on. So right now, Russia continues to market vacation trips to Crimea. It's a real shock. I don't think you would buy. Would you want to buy a vacation?
No.
Crimea at the moment.
No.
No. But in big ads, Russia is still trying to convince Russians to book a trip there. Cheap holiday packages and homes to rent are being advertised. Quote, for those who dream of the sea, Crimean holidays invite you to spend your summer break on the beaches on the Azov Sea, end quote. That's one thing. Another thing they say is, quote, sprawling beaches, clear seas, and developing hospitality infrastructure. I wouldn't, the infrastructure, maybe. Yeah, okay. it will not leave you indifferent. Well, yes, I think that's inadvertently true. It won't leave you indifferent when they bomb the bridges there. You can't get home and there are drones flying. Yeah.
Euphemistic statement.
Yeah. The only slogan I think they actively avoid at the moment is, you will have a blast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So don't go to Crimea and have a blast, people, at the moment.
Hopefully, yeah, please don't.
I mean, we all hope that the war will end as soon as possible and then maybe. But at the moment, I wouldn't do it.
Definitely not. Big no from me.
Mm-hmm. All right. Fine. We have, or rather I have, talked about the Swedish COVID response before, numerous times actually. And of course, it's been a hot topic. Lots of misinformation all around. People have been attacking me as well for being too defensive of the quote-unquote Swedish model. Because of that, I'll just try one more time to set the record straight. What I have tried to say is not that the COVID response of Sweden was perfect or even good, but that the reporting of it as an experiment or, quote, playing Russian roulette with the Swedish population, end quote, that is not correct. So that is what I've been trying to tell people over the years now. The short story is that there was a plan developed over decades before designed to be set in place if and when a pandemic happened. And Sweden stuck to that plan very rigidly, and some may say too rigidly. Mm-hmm. But a plan cannot be said to be an experiment or a random response. And maybe it was a flawed plan, but at least it was consistent and applied pretty much as it was designed or intended. Anyway, that said, there were failures. And one that I have brought up several times and that pretty much everybody agrees on is that the elderly was hit much harder than they should have been or expected. That was the worst part of the outcome, I think, in Sweden. Well, and not just only in Sweden, but definitely also in Sweden, I should say. As a consequence of this, the Health and Social Care Inspectorate, which is abbreviated IVO in Swedish, initiated an investigation to find out what the state of affairs are in all communes in Sweden when it comes to the care for the elderly, and they looked at over 53,000 journals, conducted surveys with patients, relatives and staff, and also made on-site visits on these homes for the elderly all over the country, and the results are not very good. So 75% of all people living in these homes lacked a documented special discussion with a doctor to plan their medications, and this is a discussion or a talk that is mandatory. You mm-hmm. should have this talk with a doctor. Yeah. It's required by the rules. And 75% of the cases, it was missing.
That's not a small number.
Yeah, no, that's a big number. In several cases, the IVO found that problems pointed out beforehand, when they had done inspections earlier, had not been addressed at all. There was a major lack of documentation when you looked into the journals. 20% of the patients were and are still receiving medicine that should be avoided for people above a certain age. So they were given medicine that was not suitable for them.
That's negligence.
Yeah, it is. And also, and maybe that's part of the explanation, there's a shortage of qualified staff generally all over the place.
Yeah.
So, it wouldn't be far-fetched to think this is what contributes to the bad outcome during the pandemic for people of a certain age. The report didn't draw any exact conclusions of why things are so bad, and they will look at that in the next step. My own suspicion is that it has to do with the decentralization and privatization that has happened over the last 25 years or so. But we will see what they come up with when they look more into this.
Yeah, and that actually concludes our new segment. And that means we should find out, and it's of course really exciting, if I am giving out a really wrong award or a really right award this week.
Ooh.
Yeah, and this was sent in by listener Irvin. It's a really wrong, I'll just tell you that from the start.
Okay.
Because there has been a psychic medium, and that's already where we're like, okay, that's really wrong. Bye. No. But I want to tell you more. Like, I don't want to be too short on that. She was jailed for deceiving a man out of €10,000. She has been jailed for a year. This man gave her 10,000 euro because she told him that his deceased father told her that if he did not give her the money, the devil would take his soul.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of, like, religious views are very harmful.
Yes, exactly.
And, to be blunt, stupid.
Mm-hmm. And she was described by a judge as, quote, an old-fashioned confidence trickster, end quote.
Ah, okay. Sounds fair.
Yeah. Of course, she thought she wasn't guilty, but she was not only charged for deceiving a guy called James Byrne, but she also got charged for deceiving Mariah Byrne, Mr. Byrne's sister, to give her 200 euro. So Debbie Paget, which is the medium, she apparently wasn't happy with the 10,000 and also needed more then. They found her guilty, and yeah, she's in jail now. The guy who gave her the money was asked, why did you give her the money? And he told the jury, I believed my father told her to tell me to give her the money. That's what I believed. So people could say, like, oh, why did he give her the money? But there would also be victim blaming.
Yeah.
Because this guy was in good faith. He thought that Paget was a decent person. And now he, and I quote, he said, now I know that I was taken advantage of, end quote.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you grow up and you have for all your life, I guess he was of a certain age, if you've grown up and you've lived with the fact, quote unquote, in your life that the devil is a thing, that the God is a thing, you don't have the defense to see through things like that. And if you have a very smooth, I suppose this psychic medium was a very, you know, smooth talker, somebody who's very persuasive, very charismatic and can talk you into all kinds of things. You can't say that, as you said, you shouldn't blame the victim here.
Yeah.
The full fault lies with the fraudulent mediums.
Yeah. Mm. Funny enough, he also said, I'm not a victim. I'm a survivor and I felt I have learned a lesson, end quote.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, of course, like there's more to it. Paget, the medium, also didn't have an easy life and so on and so on. But the fact stays, and the fact is that she deceived a person by threatening his soul to give her money. And that's just not okay. And that in itself is the reason why she receives this week's prize for being really wrong.
Yes, and that is well deserved.
Thank you, thank you. Yes, that basically concludes that segment. But we luckily have a word of the week. And this week's word comes from listener Mark from Australia. And
ooh, Australia!
Shreya!
Well, we know Australia is not Europe, but they're sort of honorary Europeans.
Yeah, they're also
there,
in the European Song Contest, so come on.
I mean, that's what I mean, yeah.
The kinda.
And we're very partial to them because they invited us to go there.
And I'm married to one, so.
Oh, that too.
Even
that
more
too,
reason. Yeah, and my very own Australian did us a favor and pronounced the following words. So, Mark sent in the word.
Furphy.
And that means an untruth or outlandish comment or story so fantastical as to be beyond belief.
Yeah, that's interesting because I wasn't aware about the word.
Me neither.
Furphy.
No,
but
me neither.
Today, I actually heard it used on the Skeptic Zone. It was on the last episode. I didn't get around to listen to it until today. And there was a very bad beer referred to in the episode as a furphy.
Oh.
And I said, I know what that is because Mark sent us that email.
It could also be that you were like semantically primed because you already read this and then you were like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah. So a furphy is not something good.
Yeah. The second word is
fair dinkum.
Pronounced fair dink but also one word as you just heard by my very own Australian, and it means something like, are you serious, are you sure, are you telling the truth?
Yeah, and fair dinkum. I think I've heard that one before.
Scotty actually gave me the example. If you ask your parents, hey, can I have a third ice cream? And then they sometimes say, fair dinkum.
Okay, good.
So,
good example.
I really like that example too. Okay, That concludes our show. But I don't want to let anyone go without a quote. This week's quote is short and sweet, as I'm prone to do.
Good. We've had a couple of long ones lately, I'm happy. Yeah.
Exactly. It's by Francis Bacon. We quoted Francis Bacon before, but not with this quote. Francis Bacon was an English philosopher who lived from 1561 to 1626. And he was part or very influential with philosophy and the scientific method. And now, I don't want to leave you hanging. The quote is, wonder is the seed of knowledge. End quote.
That is short and sweet.
Yeah. And also true.
Well, you have to turn to the right sources, though. You can't just sit and speculate and wonder thing, and then you try to... But of course, if you don't wonder, if you don't care to go out and find out how the world works, then of course you will not find knowledge.
Yeah, exactly.
But be careful where you look. That's what I'm trying
to say. Don't be wandering off with wonder. Sorry.
Yeah.
That was a bad joke. My dad joke of the day.
Yeah. Always welcome. Thank you. And don't turn to psychic mediums in Ireland to find out...
Nowhere.
What's going on?
Don't turn to any psychic mediums nowhere.
Correct.
With this good advice, this is really the end of the show now, of this episode, not of the whole show, of course. So thank you, Pontus, for staying with me for this episode.
Thank you.
Thank you to our listeners who are tuning in week after week. And until next week, goodbye.
Hey do.
Tschüss.
Wieslat.
This has been your ESP experience. The show is produced and recorded by the ESP.eu. Join us again next time, but until then, please send your feedback, comments, or death threats to info@theesp.eu. We would also love to hear your ideas and suggestions regarding future episodes, as well as news from your country of residence that might interest others across the continent. If you have a local event or organization to promote, please don't hesitate to let us know, as we are more than happy to help. All music in the program was written and performed by Keisha J. Gray and George Schraub and is used with their permission. Please check out our webpage at www.theesp.eu, follow us on Twitter at @espodcast_eu, and like us on Facebook.
I don't know how you can believe.
If you want to go
I went blank once, that's okay.
Okay.
That's where editing comes written, right?
Yeah.
But I think, thank you for, no, sorry, not I think, so you can cut that.
It's not far, too far-fetched. Well, I'm editing, so I can do it as many times as I need to.
That... actually concludes, sorry, concludes. Concludes.
Fair dinkum, mate.